Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right. Welcome to Think Big. Guest today, Jenny Che. Jenny, tell us where you are in the world and what you do for a living.
Yeah, I'm in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Amazing.
So very far away up north. It's actually snowing today.
Wow. You know, we got snow just 5 days ago in upstate New York. So, you know, we're not too far off, actually.
Yeah. And I own a tea company, an international award-winning tea company. And we also have a brick and mortar. So it's a tea shop, store, and also a restaurant. So like we literally have afternoon tea reservations today. We also do like Asian kind of like a little bit of dim sum type of food there too. And we sell online. And we also have the only tea farm in Alaska, and it's geothermally grown. So it's the world's first ever geothermal powered tea farm.
That's amazing. That was going to be my first question. You say you grow tea in Alaska. I was like, when? So that's awesome. I'm just curious before we get into it. I mean, how does that kind of work? I've never really heard of geothermal growing when it comes to tea. So what does that operation kind of look like for you?
So there's these hot springs about an hour out of town. And my friend owns a resort that's there. And so under this resort is all powered by geothermal heat. So there's actually a geothermal powered generator, but years before that generator was built and used, they were doing indoor, like year-round greenhouse gardening. And so the tea farm is actually in the very first greenhouse before any geothermal generator was built. And so there's actually pipes under the soil that run the hot springs water through it, so it doesn't freeze up. And so just imagine a big old greenhouse and then pipes of water, of hot springs, natural hot springs water, keeping the soil warm year round. So there's vegetables and our tea grown year round in this greenhouse.
That's amazing. This is the first time ever hearing of. So, I mean, you say it's the only in the world. So I guess it's not surprising that I have not heard of anybody else doing this with tea, but that's incredible. So tell me a little bit about, you know, your background, you know, leading up to starting this brand, Sipping Streams. I mean, just want to know like a little bit about like, you know, what led up to you getting interested in this space with tea, and what was that like, that big defining moment for you, you know, to really take the next step to like really decide like I'm gonna take this company and run with it. It's gonna be, you know, everything.
So I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. And in the restaurant industry. So we're immigrants from Hong Kong. And I was born in Hong Kong, but I grew up in Alaska since I was a baby. And my parents always said, don't ever own your own business, like ever. Like, it's such hard work. Don't do it. We came to America to give you opportunity. Pick something stable. Very much like the Asian American dream. Be a doctor, you know, kind of thing. So I went to school actually for athletic training, which is sports medicine, and physical education, teaching K through 12. So I was a double major in college. And I finished with that. So I was the first to graduate high school, first to go to college in my family, first to graduate from college. So, you know, my parents, like, they couldn't really give me any advice other than please don't be an entrepreneur, like just don't do it and don't ever have a business partner. It'll be a headache. So the tea idea like slowly developed over time. And I've been drinking coffee actually since I was 4 years old. Like I like the taste of black coffee. I was just in New York over the weekend and like my husband's like, there's like no mochas here because we were in New York City. I'm like, yeah, it's not the West Coast, you know, where Starbucks is from. So I'm like, but black coffee? Sure, I'll just drink black coffee all day. So I grew up drinking coffee. And my last year of college, I was spending way too much of my student loan money on my coffee drinks because it can be pretty pricey. So I decided to pick the cheapest thing on the menu, which was tea. And then people started assuming or making comments of why I was drinking tea. Before I could even answer their questions, they're like, oh, are you drinking tea because you're a trainer? Oh, I heard it's so healthy for you. I'm like, yeah, no, it's the cheapest thing on the menu. Like, I'm just drinking, you know, I don't want to drink water. Plus, a bottled water is going to be more expensive than that cheap old tea bag. So I started drinking tea because it just budget wise. And people would ask me questions about the health benefits of tea because I was studying health, right? I'm like, I don't know. I didn't even think that it was an actual healthy thing because I mean, I guess I just took it for granted because growing up in a Chinese family, you have tea when you eat at a dim sum restaurant or a Chinese restaurant, it's just there, right? So I'm like, okay, maybe I should find out something of this thing that I'm drinking. And because I was studying sports medicine, I would actually have to research case studies on different like rehab techniques or whatever. And sometimes there's actually case studies on tea, which I'm like, oh, let me just read through this abstract and figure out like what it says, you know, about this situation. So then I would, as the teacher in me, would regurgitate everything I could find out about tea. And it created this kind of snowball effect where more and more people were like, oh yeah, Jenny knows everything about tea. Ask her. Like, I don't know anything about tea. I'm just like telling you what I found out. So when I moved back to Fairbanks, Alaska, I worked in a physical therapy clinic. And one of the most amazing things that I realized that was different in tea culture versus coffee culture is I'd go get my Lipton tea bag in my styrofoam cup from the break room, right? Like some cheap old tea thing. And I'm carrying it around, going patient to patient to do their rehab. And some of them were tea drinkers. I only knew they were tea drinkers because this is exactly how it went. Oh, you're a tea drinker? Oh, I am too. Let me tell you about my time like having Southern tea down in the South. You notice I never answered if I was a tea drinker or not.
Right.
So every time I just had a tea bag tag hanging out of my styrofoam cup, people would start telling me about their experience with tea, their childhood, their aunts, their grandmas. And I'm like, whoa, that's so weird. I've never walked into a coffee shop and person was like, you drink coffee too? Let me tell you about myself.
And it's like a personality trait, you know?
Yeah, I guess so. Because I didn't know that was like a thing. And so I was like, this is so weird. Everyone tells me about their personal lives because I'm holding a, you know, a cup with a tea bag tag out of it. And so realizing that it started so much conversations, people would start saying, you know what, you should really open up a tea shop here. And I'm like, do you not want me to do your rehab? Like, I work here, you know, I'm doing your treatment. Like, if I own a business, I won't be working here, you know? And then fast forward, then I was a high school teacher. And then at the high school that I worked at, it was a private high school. And so many people were like, oh, Jenny knows all this information about tea, which I did not. Same story again. Like, I just find out some interesting facts. And so I tell people what I know or happen to read on a box or something like that. Then they're like, you should have Jenny teach a semester long class on tea. Oh my goodness. That was like my boot camp into like researching about tea. How do you design a semester curriculum for high school kids? Like, you got the history of tea, the science of tea. Tea is so global and international. So I designed a semester long class on tea, and more people like, you should like really do something with this. Again, same situation. I'm like, I'm your kid's teacher. If I'm going to start a tea company, I will not be here teaching your kids. So anyways, I was during summer vacation, I actually went to go visit tea farms in China. I'm like, I got summer break off. I might as well take this opportunity to go visit tea farms and learn more about tea. Because if maybe in the future, so I'm like playing with the idea in my head at this point, maybe in the future, if I want to start a tea company, then don't I need to learn like where tea comes from? Little did I know, the majority of tea business owners have never been to a tea farm. Like, I didn't know that until like,
I believe it. Know, yeah.
Years into my business, I just thought maybe it's the teacher in me. I'm like, I got to find the facts. I got to figure out how this works. So anyways, as I was on the jetway, like getting onto my plane, my private school, one of the parents calls me. It's a nonprofit, says, you're going to be laid off when you come back. We don't have enough kids to support your payroll. And so I just sat in my airplane seat and I was like, I guess I'm doing this. And then that's it.
That is so incredible. The universe literally chose you to be the arbiter of tea expertise in Alaska. I swear. That's the best story I've heard, the inception of a business. I love that. So when was that exactly? When were you on that plane back from China, like seeing the tea farms? What year was that?
That was 2007.
So you've had the, what came first? Did you start to selling the tea first and then it became the restaurant, or did you start with a restaurant, get some feedback, and then expand into like more like global sales?
It started off with tea education, actually, because I was a teacher, right?
Right.
I started like this whole curriculum on tea. I started teaching it at the university for their culinary arts department. I was doing classes in people's homes, not quite like Tupperware parties, because I didn't want to sell stuff. Like, I wanted to sell my knowledge and education. But then people would say, like, well, do you have any tea to sell? And I'm like, well, I guess I'm going to use the tea for the class. So I guess you could buy some of it. But it wasn't meant to be like a brand or a restaurant or anything. It was just literally in person, in your home, or for your organization, tea classes. And then, because again, back of my head, my parents were like, don't ever start a business, you know? So I'm like, well, it's not really business, it's classes, it's education, I'm using my degree. So it started off like that. And then I was like, well, maybe I should start a little shop, you know, have some treats. And you know, in Alaska, because there is winter time, there are seasonal shops that are up around town because of the tourism. So I tried a little touristy park in our hometown and just like had some tea items for sale, some accessories, some teas, like very basic. I think I only had like 10 teas. And then you could buy a cup of tea, or you could buy some of the packaged tea or the tea accessory. But there's nobody doing what I was doing in my town. So I'm like, let's just test this out for a summer and see how it goes. And then I had some cheesecake. My friend owned a bakery, so I sold some of their baked goods and hot tea. And over again, the tourists or the people on like tours, you could tell, you know, kind of like when you go to Disney World, there's like the whole bunch of people who walk by. All the tourists would walk right past my shop. They would not come into my shop. But the people who did come in over and over again, which, like, that first season, I was net profitable $90, because I had payroll too.
Right. So yeah. I was like, that's pretty good for a first month, though, to be positive at all. So,
yeah, exactly. And so I realized all my customers were local people. Mm. And I didn't realize how many people were like anti coffee. I mean, I did sell coffee there, because it's a historic park and there's a lot of old guys who hang out there. Like we call them sourdoughs, where they sit around and drink coffee and they're like, you have the best coffee here. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then I sell tea, you know? And so it was about to be winter time. So there's no heating in this building. And I was like, well, I guess that was the end of my experiment. But then the regulars that came in every week, they're like, well, where are you going to be in the winter? We can't go to you. And I'm like, go to me. Like, what do you mean? Like, it was just kind of mind boggling that people wanted my stuff. Cause I'm like, yeah, you know, nice experiment. And mind you, I grew up selling at the farmer's market when I was a kid. So my mom specialized in Asian vegetables that she would grow and sell. So I'm like, you know, it's just for fun. Like, my parents had their regular income, but they just did stuff like a side hustle just for fun kind of thing. And I'm like, oh, I guess I need to look for an actual place to have a store. And because people, at least in our town, because there's so many restaurants per capita here, like overly amount of restaurants here, people always buy food. And that's what I always knew growing up. Like, the food vendors at any park or festival always do well. Someone's got to eat. Mm-hmm. So when I first started my brick and mortar shop, I knew, like, I grew up making homemade steam buns from scratch. And I was like, okay, tea sandwiches. I don't want to actually be full-blown like a sandwich shop. Let's just offer these tiny, small menu of eclectic tea culture type of foods. And just very small, right? Because I don't know if I'm going to go out of business or whatever. And remember, I have no business sense per se. Like, I did not go to school for business. My parents tried to keep me away from business as much as possible. So I don't know anything about profitability, COGS, none of that. I'm just like winging it, And so I start my first tea shop in a basement location here in town. It was really funny because the locals had a hard time finding it, but the tourists who traveled to Alaska would literally Google tea shop, and then they come into this basement location. They're like, oh, this is cool. This reminds me of like the big city, like Soho, you know, like go to this like hidden gem. So I had a lot of tourists that came to my brick and mortar, actually, and then the hardcore tea drinkers. So it was kind of like reverse of my summer.
Right. Experience. Yeah. Yeah. It's like a speakeasy, like a tea speakeasy, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. Cause it was like, people like, man, this is really creepy. Am I going to get killed going down these 12 steps? There's no windows.
Right.
And it was like really open. Remember my scientific self, I know about color. And when you have no windows, especially in Alaska, because there's a lot of depression because of the lack of sunlight in the wintertime.
Right.
So I knew like what colors to have, what kind of plants to have in order to not make it feel like a basement. And I remember every time it was a new person, they'd walk through the front door and their eyes would be so big, like, whoa, this place is cool. You know, it's kind of like a hidden place of fair things.
That is amazing. That's such an awesome organic story. I love that so much. So tell me, like, kind of walk me up to like the way that the brand exists now. I know you obviously still have the restaurant. How much business are you doing through like your online e-commerce sales versus, you know, what you're doing at the brick and mortar store? Maybe things just more like organic and locally. Like, well, how much has the e-commerce and like online sales grown since then?
So more recently, my e-commerce has grown more because I paid for an ads company, SEO and ads company.
Yeah.
Because I do not specialize in any of that stuff. Like, that's okay. Cause you know, like, what is it called? Like, where you do like a little of everything and you're not good at anything. Mm. And you've only got so much capacity as an entrepreneur. So after a lot of like trial and error, realizing like, I don't know how to do Facebook ads. I don't know how to do Google ads. I don't even know what this stuff means. You know, I hired a really good ads company. I've had them for over a year, maybe 2 years now. And I know that my SEO and my online e-commerce sales have increased. Now, during COVID, that was like, I had my website. I actually started my website as an educational website when I was that high school teacher. My student helped build it. So I already had the history of the SEO, which I did not know was an advantage. Like, mm-hmm. I'm just... okay, let's do homework. Let's like build a website on tea education, right? My kids helped build it, and it looks nothing like what it was when I was a teacher. But when people started buying online from me, maybe this is like 2009, I'm literally just inserting like little buy now buttons of like the individual thing, and it goes to PayPal. But when COVID happened, because everyone's buying everything online, they don't want to go in person, they just want to do curbside pickup and stuff, I had to find a different way to do the website. But I can't just do like buy one thing at a time type of order.
Right.
So we had switched from Vend e-commerce, which doesn't do... I think they don't even handle e-commerce anymore, which was crazy because COVID just happened and I had started with Vend e-commerce and then had to find someone else. April of 2020, they said, we're getting rid of all e-commerce. I'm like, are you crazy?
That's wild. Yeah, why? That's like,
I have no clue. And that's so crazy. I vetted a bunch of places for over a month, just like researching. And so I went with Shopify, right? I'm like, lots of people have heard about Shopify. And I was like, they can handle my inventory. Cause that was another hang up was I couldn't control the inventory of what I had on hand. So sometimes I'd oversell things or I missed out on sales because I removed the button because I didn't know if I was sold out or not.
Right.
So, but now more recently, my sales have like increased even more than that first boost of during COVID. And it took a while to figure out what my best sellers were. And again, it's so crazy because it's based off of SEO.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't realize how important that was. And so actually, some of my best items on my website are not tea. It's honey. It's like raw.
Really?
Honey is my best seller. Our Alaskan fireweed honey, like we sell it every single week, so many. And like, I've been able to sell to Disney because of that. Like,
really? Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, or other like TV networks. And I was like, what? Why am I getting a wholesale order right now? From I'm like, is this a joke? Like, this person sent me an email. Like, this is like fraud, or, you know what I mean? Like, that's not real, right? Like,
right.
I don't, you know, because you get all those emails and you're like, I don't know if it's real or not.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it was because like we would pop up for honey because it was just a rare item to get this specific Alaskan fireweed honey, which is considered the champagne of honeys. And so, I mean, I didn't know that was that great of a seller, but I would say my business is probably 15% e-commerce because my business is 50% wholesale.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So if I was to like, you know, break it all apart, at least 50% is wholesale. And we've grown to that. Before it wasn't. Mm-hmm. Wholesale used to be like 25% of the company.
That's awesome. So do you foresee the e-commerce side of it? Are you planning on putting like more resources and, you know, like looking to expand the e-commerce side more while continuing to nurture your retail relationships? Or are you kind of more focused on building more retail relationships?
Oh, anything that can get me higher profitability. Mm-hmm. Wholesale takes a big chunk of your profitability.
Your direct to consumer has to be probably the best there, right?
Yep. That is always the best. And so what we do with our wholesale customers is on your packaging, you always put your website. Oh, you got this when you were a tourist in Alaska? Great. Buy more online, right?
Yeah.
So we get lots of people who have been gifted something too. And so why would I not want to push into e-commerce? You know, that's why I hired an ads and SEO company, because that's just sitting money. Mm-hmm. More revenue streams, the better. As long as you have, you know, your SOPs in place to make sure that it can get fulfilled in time. A lot of people, they blow up online and then they can't handle the fulfillment, which that is really bad for business because now you're refunding people, right? Like people who are upset. And I mean, some people will be patient with you, but some people are not so much.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a struggle nowadays just because I would say e-commerce is more difficult because it is so popular. Mm-hmm. So people are more demanding of like the customer service, how fast you fulfill, the packaging, the whatever the complaints could be. It's like opening a gigantic grocery store in a high traffic area. You just have more problems, more people, more problems.
Yep. More money, more people, more traffic. It's exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what kind of work is this, this agency you work with? I'm curious. What kind of ads are they running specifically? Are you doing Facebook, Google? Are you running ads on things like Pinterest or Etsy or social media? What is kind of their scope of what kind of like funnels and channels do they have set up for you?
So I have tried Facebook and Instagram. I don't put too much into it because remember there was that one time when like nothing on Facebook was working.
Yeah,
someone was like very hesitant with the algorithm. Mm-hmm. Of that. So we test it every now and then, but surprisingly more recently, so they do actual Facebook ads, but I also sometimes do boosted ads or boosted posts because I'm a brick and mortar, right? And so I'm thinking, oh, if I do this boosted post, there'll be more people who come in. But weirdly enough, the last couple months, the organic stuff is doing better than putting any money into a boosted post. And then for the brand building part, so our big focus this year on e-commerce or online presence is brand building, because we want to eventually franchise. We've had many people in the past ask to buy a franchise of ours, but I was like, I'm just too small. Like I don't even have the capacity to think about that and the legal stuff.
Right.
But there are lots of people who say my staff are, remember, I used to be a high school teacher, so it's like building curriculum. And so my staff are very knowledgeable because it's part of their job.
Right.
And our SOPs are pretty tight because I can't, well, even with the hiring situation, I want to teach my staff to be able to run the place by themselves. Right. Like look at McDonald's. McDonald's is run by a bunch of teenagers. Really, you know, like one man for staff.
Literally.
Yeah. So there's something to be said about that. But my ads company, they do Google ads. They do. They can do Pinterest. They asked me if I wanted to do Pinterest, and I was like, I don't know if I'm ready for that. Like, because there's just so many platforms.
Yeah.
We do YouTube ads also.
Because
we have like our own TV commercial that we make. We have a, you know, a PBS documentary. We've done like little videos on our YouTube channel anyways. So we target specifically locally or nationally, depending what we're wanting to do that way. And we even tried Bing, but like my ads guy, he's he even like looks at everything. And if it's not monetizing well enough for him, he's very, very hard on himself. He's like, he'll pull back and he'll like text me in the middle of the night. He's like, I think we should pull these Bing ads. They're not working. I thought I'd just test it. I don't want to waste your money. And I'm like, okay, great. You know,
that's good though. It sounds like a good relationship, man. No disrespect to Bing, but man, I forgot about Bing, I have to say. So it sounds like it's mostly, so you're still doing Facebook, obviously Google and SEO through Google. So those are kind of your big three. It sounds like the agency you work with are kind of like trying some things out, doing some tests. If it's not working, they seem to kind of pull back pretty quickly on those.
Yeah, well, through Shopify, I think you can see where the people's sales come from.
Yep.
So they lean into those things.
Exactly.
And then, and we also do email, like marketing, like with our email list.
Yep.
So that's not with the ads company, but we look at that data too, to try to figure out, like, are these people getting retargeted? You know, can we retarget them? Abandoned cart flow, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting. You know, when you think about paid ads, you know, most of the time you just think about it as like, you know, straight return, how much you spend. If you're making more, then it's at least good. If you're making a lot more, it's fantastic. Right. But I think one thing maybe is people from the outside looking in don't maybe necessarily realize all the time is when you have those funnels set up with those ads that go to landing pages on your website that lead to sales, they're able to see like which ones are performing well, which ones are falling off, and at which points. So that data that you get is extremely valuable in and of itself, especially if you are getting a straight return of your investment too. Say you spend $5,000 a month on ads, if you're making 10, that's fantastic. Plus you're getting all, you know, the people's information, so you can turn around and, you know, do that email campaign to, you know, drive recurring business too. That's great. So do you do some of like the email marketing? So, you know, say somebody makes a sale, like you kind of like put them on an email list and you just like send them informational like updates or new things that come out for promos you run, stuff like that.
Yeah. So like we use Klaviyo. I used to use MailChimp. And before that I used Constant Contact because it was like 2007.
Right.
And people asked me if I had an email list. That's the only reason why I started it. I didn't know that was a thing. Remember, I have like pretty much no entrepreneur experience. So I'm like, oh, I guess I have to have a list. Like, okay. And so at first it started off with like discounts and when we have sales. But then because of my whole tea education part, I'm like, what would I want to look at if I kept getting weekly emails? Like, and then at the same time, do I want to tell people every single week there's a sale? Because why would they open my email? Right, so my email weekly marketing. Yeah. So we have like in person, we have a brick and mortar like tablet, you know, where people put in their email address and stuff like that. They give us consent and they want to be on our rewards account. And that's like sunk in with Klaviyo and with Shopify. And through that, we send them, if there are promotions, maybe I do one a month. Because I just don't feel like I should just keep discounting everything because I'm going to make less money, less cash flow.
Right.
But what people want to know and why people are attracted to my business and what I hear from the feedback, right? It's easy to have instant feedback if you're able to meet people in person. That's one advantage of having brick and mortar, is that people are attracted to the knowledge of my staff. So I was like, okay, well, what if I just give them some tea education about whatever the theme is for this month, March, St. Patty Day, green tea, matcha, and then you just have a link, right? And then they could buy it. And then you make sales that way. So you don't always have to discount everything, but you should make things like interesting. Or links to like my YouTube channel. And there's so many different things that I'm on, like our YouTube channel, our tea podcast, our PBS documentary about our tea farm. Like, it's out there in so many places that I just need to bring it all in and remind people. And I sometimes forget that I have to say the same thing over and over again because there's always new people on the list.
Right, right. Yeah, so do any, I was curious, like, you know, with the ads you have currently running and, you know, some of the other things that you're looking to expand into, what does growth look like for you as we pretty much end Q1 of 2024, you know, as opposed to like maybe the prior like 2 or 3 years? What are your kind of growth projections looking like from a revenue standpoint as you go through the rest of 2024? Like, where do you see yourself landing, you know, 2025 if we were to speak a year from now?
So like my revenue growth, is that what you're asking about? Sure, specifically? Yeah.
Sure.
So like overall revenue growth, we're hoping to grow by like 15 to 25% by the end of this year.
Amazing.
And it's also because we have that honey, that darn honey. It's one of those things that has actually made us get bigger and bigger. Like if you told me forever ago that it'd be mostly selling honey or that's what people would be attracted to, I'd been like, what? I'm a tea company. But you just got to give people what they want, you know?
Yep.
So that's one of the opportunities we have to really explode is the honey part. And we make several honey products that nobody on earth makes yet for some reason. I don't know. It was just like an idea. That's what huge corporations, TV networks and such have been asking for. So we're actually restructuring our manufacturing right now to be able to take that huge explosion. And so like one of our honey products, QVC, has been waiting on for like over a year. This is more of like the stabilizing, making sure everything's good to go. Because remember I said, if you can't fulfill, you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting all of our stuff, our inventory control, our numbers ready, the procedures, our supplies, our suppliers, all that stuff ready. So that when there is a huge explosion, because if we are on QVC, hopefully it will happen soon, then more people are going to want to buy from our e-commerce site, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you could be like, whoa, I want to jump, like, I want to double my business. I'm like, are you ready?
Yeah. Yeah. Could you even?
Yeah.
That's amazing. So that's really interesting, you know, perspective on the business, I think. So is this QVC that you're waiting for? Are they just taking like the honey products, or are they doing like a more like survey of like the entire brand?
It's one honey product line.
It's just the honey. That's so cool. Yeah. So you're really spearheading this like retail and QVC relationships with the honey, and then kind of like turning that around to drive people to, you know, the website where there's obviously, you know, huge variety there, where you're getting, you know, better margins and things selling direct to consumers. That sound about right?
Yeah. I mean, we do make actually pretty good margins on the honey, but okay. We don't farm the honey. My friend's gotcha. Family does. And so, I mean, we do make good profitability, but the tea also makes more than right. that does. And if it's going, it's not a loss leader. Remember, like it's, I mean, that much of volume you cannot have as a loss leader, but then you can have those upsells, like upsells on your app. You know, like I use one of the upsell things on Shopify and I'm like, hey, yeah. I was able to sell them some of that because they bought some honey. Okay, great. You know, it's about trying the product. And if you can't get them to try the product, because if it's so amazing, that's great. If it's so amazing, you won these awards, blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't, until they experience it for themselves, and e-commerce is hard because you have to have it in your hands to experience it, they're not going to buy.
Right. Yeah. That's awesome. So let me ask you this. This is a question I always love to ask everybody that comes on the pod. You know, obviously you've had a long journey, a lot of learning since teaching the class in school to generally learning about it while you were in school yourself. So taking all of this into account, everything you've learned about, you know, running a business, about tea in general, all things considered, you know, if you could go back to kind of like the inception of the brand, with like right when you started the brand, you know, what would be your one biggest piece of advice to yourself? If you could go back in time and tell yourself just one big thing.
Oh, know your numbers. Like I said, I had no idea what COGS even stood for. I didn't know what my profitability was. I'm like, well, it's this much I got, you know, I guess it's good money. And I remember my first year was $250,000, like one of my first years.
That's killer.
I thought that was amazing.
Yeah.
Now where I am, I'm like, no, I need more. So like, I want more for my staff, for my team, to grow the team. So like there's more of the burden being shared. You know, it's nice being seven figures. Like there's nothing wrong with that. But if I understood how important it was, because I was just, I think maybe I was like a little arrogant because my parents didn't want to coach me, but they would ask me questions like, do you know how much profit you have? I'm like, no, but you didn't tell me how I figured that out. Because they don't want to meddle, because they don't want to help me because they don't want me to do it. They're like, well, maybe if she fails, then she'll do something else, right? But here I am still. And it's really funny because now my parents are retired and they help me out.
Oh, nice. It's full circle. That's the, that's the best. Oh, that's awesome. I think that's really good advice. I mean, even just at a super high level, there's somebody who has had such an organic path to, you know, creating a company like you did. You know, you can kind of get lost, I think, in sometimes in, like, you know, the conceptual nature of it, or just thinking about, like, you know, the big picture, because you just kind of like went along with this ride that was just kind of like happening with you, right? Where you can kind of get lost and not, like, you know, bear down and take a look and know your numbers and things like that. I think a lot of entrepreneurs that listen to the pod, especially, you know, younger folks or even maybe more seasoned entrepreneurs that maybe are getting into a new online venture kind of like you, is, you know, I think that's really good advice for people to hear from somebody like you who had such an organic success story. So I think that's really valuable. But hey, Jenny, I just want to say thank you again. This conversation has been incredible, really insightful. I think people will really enjoy it. So I just want to give you an opportunity before we jump off here to, you know, plug the website, let people know about your socials. You know, people want to see the pod, they want to keep in touch with the company and, you know, stay informed. Let them know.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So if you want to learn more about our company, just check out sippingstreams.com. All the links to everything are on that website. And of course, you can always buy our products on our website too.
Awesome. Amazing. I just want to say thank you again, Jenny. It was a great conversation. I really appreciate it. And we'll be in touch soon. I wish you continued success.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Jenny. Thanks, everyone.